Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and you're listening to part of the Priest System Teleseminar Series. And today our guest is Ross Goldberg. You're going to want to have a pencil handy and paper because he's going to be taking a lot of notes. Ross is going to be talking with us about social media and Web 2.0, and he has a vast storehouse of knowledge and real-life experience on this subject. And as people have heard, this actually is turning out to be a very powerful and very reliable way of generating targeted, qualified traffic to your website. A lot of information about this topic out there, some of it good, some of it maybe not so good, but Ross is going to give us the best stuff. And so welcome, Ross.
Thank you, Ken. I'm honored to be here and very, very excited to be part of the system.
Ross is one of our new faculty members this year for the System Seminar, which will be held in Chicago. That's May 30th, 31st, and June 1st. Ross was introduced to us by Todd Taylor, and those of you who've been with the system for a while know that Todd has been our possibly, I never really thought about this, but possibly our number one new talent scout, new in the sense of new to us. If you like Sydney Johnson, and I know she was one of our most popular faculty members and has consistently been, Todd recommended me to her. And if you've enjoyed Tim Gorman's work, formerly captain in the U.S. Army, now major in the U.S. Army, Tim Gorman, and his work on article marketing, you can thank Todd Taylor again for introducing Tim to me. And so now we've got Ross Goldberg. Ross, you've got a pretty remarkable story of how you discovered the Internet and found your place in it. Let's talk about that for people and give people a sense of where you've come from.
Sounds great. I'm happy to cover that. I grew up in the Chicago area. My parents split when I was around 10, and my mother remarried almost immediately. Moved us up to Wisconsin, which was a very different dynamic, and I almost immediately got involved with gangs, which was strange because in Chicago I wasn't. I moved to the middle of nowhere and, of course, start causing trouble. So got in pretty deep pretty fast. I was 13, 14, 15 years old, hanging out with 18, 19, 20-year-olds, getting into a lot of trouble. So by the time I was 17, 18, I was done. I caused so much trouble as a kid that by the time I was an adult, I didn't even want to cause any trouble anymore.
You've gotten it out of your system.
Oh, I definitely got it out of my system. So the next step was I moved to Florida for a year, went to school a little bit, actually held a full-time job, kind of pulled my head out of my behind and behaved a little bit, and moved back home a year later and decided to join the Army. So joined the reserves at 20 years old, and when I joined, the problem was that being a young punk in high school, I was the kid who walked the mile run with a cigarette in my mouth, so I wasn't exactly an active individual.
Okay.
So I sign up for the Army, and I'm running 2-3 miles every other day, and my body didn't like it very much. I ruined both of my ankles almost immediately. I sprained them, and then, you know, being a dumb, tough guy, instead of letting them heal, I went right back to running and basically ruined them permanently. So by the time I was done with basic training, it was physically impossible for me to run at all. So I went on to my job training. It got stuck there for an extra 10 days or so they could get an authorization for me to do a walk and get out of there. Got back home, and nobody told me, but my medical records were left behind at the hospital where I'd gotten treatment for my injuries. So I get back, and I'm in pain, and, you know, all I'm thinking is I need to see a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Army caused this, so let them pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
No one ever told me they had to have my medical records to do that, and they didn't tell me that they weren't there. So I got irritated, and about 2-3 months into it, I said, I'm not waiting anymore. I'm done. Ran away from the Army for roughly a year. Went back right before the Iraq War started, maybe 7-8 months before that happened, and didn't have my medical records, all kinds of problems. Everyone, you know, treated me like a jerk because I ran off. So fulfilled my obligation. What was that, Ken?
You're lucky you didn't end up in the brig.
Yeah, exactly. Well, as a reservist, they don't take this as seriously.
Oh, right. Oh, okay, that's right. You're a reservist. Okay.
So went back in, you know, did what I was meant to do and didn't do my job, but they found others for me and stuff like that. So a few months after I went back, I was in a lot of pain all over the place, everywhere. So still didn't have my medical record, still hadn't seen a doctor for the injuries that I had previously, and now I have new ones. So I was on morphine, Vicodin, all kinds of painkillers, and finally, a year and a half, 2 years later, was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, which is mostly a woman's disease. Basically, it's everything hurts everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of kept going with that. At least I got a diagnosis finally, and the Department of Veterans Affairs started putting me through school because I had worked in retail management up until that point, and you can't stand on your feet 60 hours a day when your ankles don't work.
Right.
So went back to school, did really well, and we were living on about $1,000 a month. At that point, my wife and I had two kids with a third on the way. And the $1,000 a month barely covered diapers, let alone expenses, rent, bills. So eventually, July of 2005, I'd been in school about a year and a half, I turned to my wife and I said, you know, honey, I've got to do something. We can't live like this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can only go so long where you're begging for money from relatives. I have too much pride to be able to comfortably beg and beg and beg and beg.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I started searching around on the internet for products that I could get for cheap and then resell, and got lucky and found one. The product was memory foam mattresses.
Okay.
So I threw them up on eBay and got sales immediately. In fact, I didn't even know it, but my supplier was on eBay and I was selling more than them.
Hmm.
So 2 weeks later, I went into a coma.
What? A literal coma? A
literal coma. It started where in all honesty, I couldn't go pee. So I went to the emergency room. They drained my bladder. I went home. This was 3 days straight where this had to happen. The third day, I couldn't walk. And I'm a bit of a fiery individual, and my wife tried to get me mad, so, you know, to knock some sense into me. I was hallucinating, talking about the world ending and all kinds of craziness. And finally, I turned to her just very calm and somber and said, honey, call 911. I can't move my legs.
I know that just for everybody's knowledge, sudden erratic behavior, and I emphasize the word sudden, is usually a sign of the stroke. So if anybody has a relative or a friend who suddenly is just doing weird stuff like with the overnight, he or she probably has some kind of brain injury that needs immediate attention. I don't know if that was your case, but
it wasn't a stroke, but it was a brain injury, and I'm almost there.
Okay, just
so went to the hospital the third day, and we had a bad experience the 2 days prior with the one that was extremely close to our house, so we went to our doctor's hospital a little further away. Living in Wisconsin, you know, there aren't 15 hospitals to choose from. There's one, and then there's another maybe. So went to the hospital, and they tried to send me home on the third day. And my wife turned to him and said, what do you want me to do, throw him over my shoulder? The guy can't walk. So I was still hallucinating and being a bit crazy, and that evening I went into the coma, and thankfully I was at the hospital. So I was there comatose for roughly 10 days. On the ninth day, I had opened my eyes and locked eyes with my little boy. He's my youngest. And we stared at each other for about 60 seconds, and I went back under. So the next morning I woke up, they were actually about to do a tracheotomy, which is put a hole in my throat. So It's a good thing that I woke up. I had pneumonia throughout most of my coma. What had happened was my brain and spine swelled up. It was encephalomyelitis is what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it happened very quickly, and I woke up, was still hallucinating, my brain was still swollen, and I thought I was fine. I kept trying to get up and walk away, yanking out IVs and all kinds of stuff, so I had to be strapped down, and it was crazy. I mean, I thought I was fine and ready to go home.
Wow.
So it was roughly 3 weeks of very intensive rehab. I had turned to them a few days after I woke up and said, just so you know, I'm going home on this date. And they're like, probably not. I said, okay, you watch. And lo and behold, I left on that day. I was still in a wheelchair at that point, but walking a little bit with a walker. Ended up finally walking roughly 60 days after I went home. I was on my feet most of the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So while I was in the hospital, I actually profited about $1,000. I wasn't even there.
That's so funny, because the internet marketer in me, as I'm listening to this story, is thinking, what happened to this mattress business?
Exactly.
So you made some money while you were in a coma.
Yes.
That's a good headline.
Well, exactly. You know, it's one thing to make your first dollar online, but can you make $1,000 while comatose? So, I got home and just dove into my business face first. I mean, I was in a wheelchair and didn't really have much else to do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
if anything put urgency in you, that had to have done it.
Oh, and, you know, especially seeing that $1,000. You know, that was what we made normally in a month. I had set this stuff up in a period of a few days and wasn't even there and still
because
made $1,000.
And all this internet stuff was still relatively new to you, too, so it must have been just unbelievable to make money while in a coma.
Well, you talk about a motivator.
Yeah.
I was not there and still made $1,000. So dove into it face first. The eBay fees were insane, so we set up a website and got all excited, said, okay, I've got my website up. Here comes all the money, and everyone's going to find us right away, and we're going to be rich. And, yeah, that didn't happen. So
a familiar tale.
Yes. Yes, it is. I hear it now and still giggle because I remember feeling that way.
Were you still selling mattresses on your own website?
Yes. It was the same products, just it's funny because when you just sell products online, if you have an innovative product, you basically price it yourself and you see what your customers will pay. When you're dealing with eBay, you've already got to price it low. Then we wanted to transition our eBay customers to our website, so we had to price it lower.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the profit margin wasn't anywhere near what we wanted it to be, but we still did really well. We built that business up to about $400,000 in sales in the first year.
Wow, from the time you got out of the hospital?
From actually the time I went into the hospital.
Oh, you count that as day one of your business?
Absolutely. Hey, that $1,000, that's something I'm extremely proud of. The last thing I'd want to do is discount that like it didn't happen.
Gotcha. So from the time you walked into the hospital and went into a 10-day coma, and a year elapsed, and by the end of that year you'd booked $400,000 in online sales.
Yep, and made about six figures profit. So at that point, literally on our one-year anniversary, a vendor took off with about $4,000, and we had no idea what we were doing when we set up our business, so we were drop shipping. That $4,000 doubled and turned it into $8,000, and
mm-hmm.
being that our eBay was a big piece of our business, roughly half at that point, a couple customers realized something was going on. Their orders weren't arriving in time, so the backlash was huge. That initial $4,000 ended up turning into about $25,000.
In things that you had to cover.
Exactly. So
our
big six-figure business, we had to close it.
Wow.
Plus,
so
it was personal debt. We never incorporated.
Okay.
So big lesson there.
You'd rolled this huge boulder up the hill, and right when you got to the top, somebody pushed it.
And it squashed us.
Yeah, yeah. That, you know, guys, I hope people listening to this call, these things happen in business, and they happen to everybody. And so if it hasn't happened to you yet, good. Maybe you can avoid it. If it has happened to you, you've got good company. Just pick yourself back up and start again, which is obviously what you did.
Yes, it is. We started doing search engine optimization services, and this is actually where a bit of the social media stuff comes in, because we were using sites like social bookmarking services to link build and get great results insanely fast.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found with search engine optimization as a service is that if you can get people results in a month, they want them in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get them in 1 week, they want them in 1 day. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, we did really well. We got every customer got what they were promised, but we closed that down roughly 90 days after we started. The service was just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
So then I wrote my first book. I said, you know, if I can do the service for people, I can teach them to do it for themselves. So then history began. And
okay.
We taught people a little bit of social media stuff in that book, and then there was a huge demand for it, which told us that people wanted to know more about Web 2.0 style marketing. So,
Ross, what year would this have been?
This was 2006, roughly September.
Gotcha. So about 2 years ago, you were already getting a lot of traction with social media and starting to teach people, and they were getting results from what you were teaching them as well.
Exactly. The results were insane. The testimonials were flooding in. And the amazing thing was, while we knew so much, there was so much we didn't know. We
mm-hmm.
knew how to find customers and get traffic to our websites. That's what we were good at. But we had no idea how to write a good sales letter, no idea what information people needed when they purchased to make sure that they download everything okay. So that was something that I had to teach myself over the last year. It's been about roughly a year and a half that we've been information marketers, and the traction we've gained has been absolutely ridiculous. Literally came out of nowhere and went from newbie to guru in no time at all, which was very, very strange and really hard to grasp onto and hold.
Mm-hmm. Because you really only started selling on the internet in 2005?
Yes.
Okay, and it's, you know, we're recording this call in 2008, so you went from figuring out how to sell a physical product on the internet to discovering what was then and still is now the cutting edge of traffic generation. You then established a business as an expert in that field, and then converted that into an information product business, and made guru all in 3 years. That's pretty fast.
It's beyond fast, and you know, the people like Ken MacArthur, not McCarthy, we're new friends. Mike Filzame referred me to his mentor, Rich Sheffrin. I mean, things that you just don't expect to happen have been happening to us since the beginning. When Mike Filzame touts you as the only traffic generation guy he listens to, when he's friends with John Reese, that means something.
Uh-huh.
So I have a lot of people that gun for me that are really happy to be involved with me, and now our relationship is growing, and it just keeps going. The boulder got to the top of the hill, and it's now rolling downward very quickly.
Okay.
So life is grand, and we're always testing new things and playing with new social media sites and generating as much traffic as possible.
Well, let's see if we can give listeners some understanding of social media, especially as it relates to getting qualified traffic to your website. We usually have a pretty broad spectrum of listeners, people that are brand new to internet marketing, people that may have been in it for already over 10 years. We might have some social media pros on this call, but frankly, there aren't that many in the world. So I'm going to guess that even people that have been involved in the internet for a while may not really understand this whole social media phenomenon. We started to notice it about 2.5 years, 3 years ago ourselves, and we're still coming to grips with it. We've had a social media section at every one of our system seminars. This will now be the third year that we're covering the topic, but it is a huge topic. But most important, it's a lucrative topic for business owners to get a handle on. So let's start with the basics. When we say social media, what kind of websites are we talking about? Maybe you could mention some names, and what is the unifying theme that makes all these websites under the umbrella of social media?
Sure. Well, social media, I hate the term Web 2.0, just to make that clear. Web 2.0 is just a term some guy came up with one day, and no matter who you ask, they'll give you a different answer on what it is. If they're tech guys, they'll give you different techno babble. If they're guys like me who generate traffic, you'll hear terms like branding and reaching your customer. Social media is a term that I feel better describes the different Web 2.0 style sites. What they encompass are social bookmarking, social networking, video, podcasting, blogging. Basically what it is improved communication based through the web.
Gotcha. So it really covers a broad array of websites. It's not just discussion boards or just video sites. It's basically the simplest way to look at it is just the new generation of websites.
I would agree with you. And it's funny because sites like forums are social media as well. I mean, it's just people communicating with each other based on different web platforms.
So just as a quick sidebar, the guy that basically invented the web browser, obviously, you know, a lot of people were involved in that, but there was one guy that really made it happen, and he co-founded Netscape, and now he's run a company called Ning, which is a social media company. He's really high on the web as a social and communications tool, as opposed to an information repository tool, which is how a lot of people think of it and use it. And he and I happened to do seminars together way back in 1994, and I was just watching the tape of one of those, and he was so clear even back in 94 that the web was the web's main strength, and nobody knew what was going to happen in 94. Where the web was going to go, if it was even going to go at all. But he was very clear that far back that it was the communications aspect, connecting people to people, that was where the web was going to shine. And that didn't so much show in the first 10, 12 years of the web. But, wow, it's certainly coming out now with all these social media sites.
I would agree. If you look at the most visited websites in 2005, you'll see Google, Yahoo, BBC, eBay. Now if you look, the top seven websites include MySpace, YouTube, and Facebook. And Wikipedia, very different websites. The interesting thing about different social media sites is that once you learn what they are and what they're good for, you'll see that they're not just one thing. For instance, YouTube is a video website, but you can add friends. People are having full-blown conversations. It's a social networking website, too. MySpace isn't just social networking. There's also video. There's news. There's all kinds of other stuff. So it's hard to categorize a website now. Even a site like Dig, which is a social bookmarking website, there's a social networking aspect to it.
Let's talk about the bookmarking sites, because I think everybody grasps MySpace and Facebook. That's basically a service that lets you create your own website or web page within a community. Everybody understands YouTube, which is post videos or look at videos. Flickr, which I think could be considered social media. Again, it's a community site that allows people to post and search photographs. But what about these bookmarking sites? They seem to be the ones that have a lot of the juice. Can you explain, first name some of the big players in that area and what they are and how people use them and why people use them?
Absolutely. Well, social bookmarking is a concept that's similar to just adding a website to your favorites on your computer. Someone had the bright idea one day to be able to do that to the public and share it with others. And that's the the center idea around most social bookmarking websites. The big ones are Dig, Delicious, StumbleUpon, and there are tons of others. There are hundreds of others. I have a list posted to the web where there's 180 of them.
Is this something that you give away?
Of course.
Wow.
I have a blog where I post. I posted to it a whopping 3 times in a year, but I post lists of different websites. Right now there's a list of social bookmarking sites, a list of video sharing sites, and a list of press release sites. So
you're one of those really hyperactive bloggers then. With 3 posts
I have about
a year.
18 of them.
Oh, you have 18 blogs.
Yeah. And I have 4 in surrounding just internet marketing.
Wow.
And then there are my niche ones.
Hey, listen, because you're so generous to have that list available for free, because I know of situations where people are charging a small fortune for a list like that, you know, literally 4 figures just to get the list. And you're giving it away. I didn't even realize you had that data available to people. Maybe you'd like to tell people who are listening to this call where they could go to get that list.
Of course. The URL for that is imresourcelists.com.
Okay. Pretty easy to remember.
It's simple enough.
imresourcelists.com. And there they'll get over 100 social bookmarking sites.
Yes, and they'll get a podcast telling them how to use the sites properly and how to basically monetize that sort of thing and lead it to more dollars, which is always the goal when you're marketing something online.
Excellent. And for those of you that, I mean, I guess the only people listening to this call are the people listening to this call, I want to congratulate you for listening and staying with these calls, because we're not hyping things. We're doing our level best to give you very solid information. And I want to encourage everybody to listen to as many of these pre-seminar calls as you can, obviously listening to the ones that are most relevant to what you're doing. And do listen to them and do take notes. I'm really not kidding, because we will be dropping gems along the way. And this is clearly one of them, because, again, I know of one situation where if you wanted a list like this, the only way you could get it was to pay a couple $1,000s, and you just got it for free. So, Ross, thank you very much for that. So now, here's a question that I have. On the one hand, it's exciting to hear that there are, 100-plus sites like this. On the other hand, it's kind of a pain in the neck. It's like, oh, my God, I got enough to deal with. Now I've got to learn the ins and outs of, 100-plus sites and, which ones, how the heck would anybody use all of those? And is there a way to figure out which ones are more powerful or more worthwhile than the others? And these are the kind of questions that pop into my head.
Well, of course. I do have like a top 5 that I use. And it's based on the fact that the links are followable. They rank well in the search engines. Some of my bookmarks outrank the actual pages that I submit to these sites. So,
you know what, this is really obvious stuff to you and me and probably most of our listeners, but it never hurts to define terms. So the links are followable. What does that mean, and why is that so important when you're doing SEO or social media marketing?
Okay.
What does it mean for a link to be followable, and, gee, aren't all links followable, and what's up with that?
Well, they're followable to the naked eye, to the click of the mouse. But what happens is most of these sites got spammed so hard and so fast by people that were looking for extra links pointing to their website, which equate to better search engine rankings. So what they did was there's a simple tag you can put in the code to create a link that tells Google not to give any credit to that link at all. It's called a no-follow tag. And most of the bookmarking sites use them now. Part of the post that I mentioned about on the blog that I gave you guys the address for, it has a list of the ones that have followable links where Google will give you credit for a link on this website. So
gotcha.
what that means is when you post your URL to this website, not only does Google give you credit, but those links themselves can at times outrank your actual page on your website that you submitted to it.
Gotcha. And this takes us to another related topic. Again, this may be old news to a lot of people, but it's new enough, and it's certainly important enough that it's worth going over. Google gives your website ranking based on a lot of factors, but one of the most potent of all the factors is how many people are linking to that site. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
So, one way to do that, I guess in the old, people that their companies in India, I guess, where people would hire, folks to just sit down and, generate lots and lots and lots of link relationships. But the search engines got wise to that strategy, especially when the links made no sense. You know, there's a website about motorcycles, and it's linking to a website about lingerie. It's like, what's going on here? And I think that faded to a degree. So what's replaced it is mention of a website on one of the hot social media websites. Is that correct?
Yes and no. There will always be spam. There's nothing at all that can be done to completely eliminate it. No matter how advanced Google gets, people will figure out some way to spam.
Mm-hmm.
But there will also always be the people that are like, okay, well, I can spam, but if I do that, then I just got to start over when I get caught, and that stinks. So, I'm just going to do it the right way from the start. And the right way to do it is to simply put your content and put smart content where you're not spamming and you're just putting out good information for people. And that's what people really want anyways. That's what the Internet is based upon, the idea of getting the information you're looking for quickly.
This is such an important topic for beginners and even people that have been around for a while. It seems every 3 months or so a new technique comes along for supposedly Internet marketing that's spam-based. We had a lot of stuff where people were using blogs, in sort of a spammy way to generate traffic. And, it created a big spike of income for certain people, and then that got packaged into a huge, many thousands of dollars secret program. And bottom line is, stay away from stuff like that. Start with value first. First of all, make sure that the product that you're offering, whatever it may be, is a true value proposition for the marketplace. And then second, as Ross is saying here, make sure that your website itself is a value proposition for the Internet. In other words, it's not. All of us have been to sites that are non-sites. They just have a bunch of links, and you're basically tricked to get there. And yes, you can temporarily make some money that way. But the key word there is temporary. And before we were talking about rolling a rock up a hill and having it roll down over you. That's what happens to all of this spam activity. It works for a while, and then it stops working. So what you're really looking for in this business, and it's just common sense if you think it through, you're looking for things that you build today that you'll have tomorrow so that you can build on that and build on that and build on that. I happen to be making this call right now from sunny New Orleans. I think it's about 72 degrees. But Ross is up in Wisconsin, and it's cold. But one of the things they have in Wisconsin is snow. And everybody's heard the phrase snowball, something snowballs. This is a really important concept for business. You've got to, and I don't think a lot of people have thought it through how significant it is. You've got a ball of snow, and it's a certain size, and you roll it over once, and it gets bigger. And it gets bigger based on the size of the ball. So the bigger the ball, the more area gets covered, the more the ball grows. If you've got a good Internet marketing system, one that's based on value, every time you roll that ball, you not only maintain the original size and value and scope of your business, but you add a whole other layer. And it's not and I hope I'm not getting too obtuse here for people, but it's not an arithmetic gain. It's almost a geometric gain. Let me just cut to the chase here. If you build your business on a solid foundation, you get unbelievable fringe benefits and unexpected windfalls and surprise checks and all kinds of amazing things. If you're on a solid basis and you're continually growing that business and moving it forward. If you've got one of these kind of, you know, thief in the night kind of businesses where you run in, do a lot of spamming, grab a lot of money, pat yourself on the back, and then next week the rules change and you have to start from scratch, you're really kind of a fool. So don't be a fool and don't follow fools and don't give a lot of money to fools to learn their foolish behavior. Focus on value. So end of my sermon. Let's get back to the
Well, you know, it's funny, Ken, but there is a reason that you absorb the type of faculty that you do, and it's because we all have similar values and believe many of the same things, including especially what you just said. Building, it's amazing because it's almost like Lincoln logs. You can build a big house with a Lincoln log, but if you set it on fire, it's gone.
Right.
Now, you could build it out of concrete where you could set that on fire and it's not going anywhere. So you have a choice of building your business with Lincoln logs, with spammy methods that could be caught the day after you do them. You may make $1,000, but it's gone, and then you have to start over and begin building again.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could build the cement foundation that can't be removed.
Mm-hmm.
By putting out real content, putting it in places where people are going to want to read it. That's why what Tim Gorman teaches is so amazing, because article marketing, it can't ever die.
And just for folks who don't know, again, Todd Taylor introduced us to Tim Gorman, and he was on our faculty last year, and he's coming back this year. We're very excited about that. And when we met him, his sole method of marketing, the only thing he did, was write and post articles. To article directories, and his sole method of monetization was AdSense. So talk about, and there's a reason for that. He was and still is active duty in the U.S. Army, so he's got his hands full, to say the least. He's got a young family, so he didn't have a lot of time to learn a lot of things and experiment. He found something that worked for him, and he did it. But the key to article marketing is what we were just talking about a second ago. It's creating real value and getting it up on the net. And what Ross just referred to, the fact that it can't go away. You know, that's a good, you know, the net is a double-edged sword. You know, I'm going to say something kind of funny here. One of the pieces of advice they give young ladies when they're in New Orleans on Mardi Gras is that they're going to, you know, behave foolishly, wear a mask. Because pictures have a way of traveling on the internet forever, and that's the bad side of the internet. And the good side of the internet is if you put out value, that also will travel forever and build, much the way you know you build a snowman by rolling the ball over and over again. So there's a cumulative effect. It's a little hard to describe until you experience it, but believe me, when you experience it, you'll be remembering this call and going, "I'm so glad I went that direction." So let's go back to this issue of spamming social media websites and not spamming and actually providing value to social media websites. Because there's so much material about this topic now and some of it's a bit foggy, let's try to get really clear about what would constitute spam in this context of social media networks and what constitutes contributing real value.
Well, it really depends on the type of site that we're talking about. For instance, YouTube, you could put up a quick 30-second video with, you know, a couple of slides, maybe a little background music, but no real information. It's going to get maybe 30 views in a period of a week, where if you just get, you know, a webcam for $25 from Walmart and talk smart into the webcam itself, throw that up on YouTube, you could get hundreds of thousands of views in a day. It's a matter of putting out the right content and reaching your audience. This can be done through simply looking through social websites, forums, MySpace, see what people are talking about, see what their gripes are, their complaints, their questions, and provide answers to those questions. And you then become the maven or the expert when it comes to that subject. So on your MySpace profile, you can post answers to some of the most interesting questions to your potential customer. And what's going to happen is that these people are going to just naturally find you. And then you'll resonate with them, and they'll want to know more about you. So then they start finding your websites. They start finding your products. They start buying them.
So this is about seeding the social media sites with your basically your profile and the thing that you want to focus on. So let's take an example just out of thin air. Let's say you sell high-end stereo equipment. One of the things you could do would be to create a site on MySpace that is all about the glories of high-end audio equipment, where you're talking about it, other people are talking about it, you're posting videos, you're answering questions, that kind of thing.
Exactly. And what I'm going to be going over at the system in Chicago is how to integrate all of these methods together, because you know, there's 30 different ebooks telling you how to market yourself on MySpace, but the true power comes from when you combine all of these different methods into a system that works for you. So that's actually what I'm going to be teaching at the event itself. Now, what I would tell somebody who doesn't know anything, has no training in this region, what I would tell them is to focus on one thing, get really good at it, and then move on to the next.
You mean one particular website or?
One particular piece. So if they're going to start doing videos, you know, the first thing is that they have to have certain software and things like that. I always believe, especially when you're just starting out and may not have the money, instead of spending, you know, $300 on Camtasia, get the trial version and make it pay for itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Amen to that. Yeah. Part of business is war. In many ways, and part of war is making sure that you've got the ammunition you need when you need it. And if you blow all your rounds, you know, in the first hour, what are you going to do the next hour and the next day? The enemy's still coming at you. What does that have to do with business? Well, I see a lot of people, they get excited and they are inflamed with excitement by promotions and stuff, who just, you know, they spend, frankly, more money than they really should. On various things, and one of the keys, and if you look at everybody who's successful in business, and I mean everybody, especially if they're successful for the long haul, not just a flash in the pan. I'm not going to say we're cheap, but when it comes to business, we want every dollar to justify itself, and justifying itself means that dollar's going to come back with friends, you know, so. Yeah, there are an enormous number of free and very inexpensive things you can do to build an email, to build an internet business. I was saying email there because one of the things I would recommend to everybody is just a basic thing to do, and it's very inexpensive, and it's sort of the core of a lot of successful internet businesses is get with a good autoresponder service. I happen to like aweber.com. You may find one that you like. But I mean, I don't even look at the bill anymore because it's so trivial compared to the value we get. But I think it's under $30 a month.
It's under 20.
And why am I bringing? Pardon me.
It's under 20.
Under 20. Good Lord, these guys are amazing. And why do I bring that up? Look how reasonable that is. And when you actually get into using autoresponders, and you know, having various segmented mailing lists, which is what a good autoresponder does, and being able to send sequential email follow-ups to people, which means they sign up, you know, at midnight, and they're starting to get the sequential email. You don't have to manually do any of that. You can track how many people are opening your email. This is a million and one wonderful things that a good autoresponder service does, and it's $29. It's less than $20 a month, and. You know, I don't like to talk about, you know, oh, I made so much money and this or that, but I can tell you I have made many, many, many six figures. I've never really calculated. It might be into the seven figures purely with autoresponders. So keep what Ross said close to your heart, which is when you're about to spend a dollar on something related to your business, make sure you see a clear path for it to get back. And, you know, do something, you know, let's say there's a Camtasia course out there, which is very good, and There are a couple of really good ones. There's one that we're going to recommend on another call. But let's say you see that and it's thousands of dollars. But as Ross says, get the free one first. Fool around with it. See if you like it. See if you're actually going to do the work. Don't buy the excitement. Don't buy somebody else's fantasy slash dream. Roll up your sleeves and get in there and see if you actually can do something with minimal resources. And then if that's working, then that makes sense to make a bigger investment. So your recommendation is focus on one area of social media.
Absolutely, especially if you're going at it on your own to start. It just makes sense to really focus on one thing at a time because, you know, odds are you have no idea what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you can at least ensure that you're getting the results that one would want for their business by focusing on one thing at a time.
Gotcha. If we were to take the ecology of social media and all the different animals and plants in it, what would be some of the big categories if we were to sort of, you know, do a taxonomy of it? You know, we've got video sites, we've got bookmarking sites. What would be some other big categories?
Social networking sites, blogging sites, whether they're yours or networks of blogs or all kinds of other things, I consider them to be in the blogging category.
Okay.
There are wikis, which is, it can actually be very confusing, but the easy way to explain what a wiki is basically it's a website that anyone can modify. You know, with your blog, there may be you, there may be a few other authors, but that's it. Others can comment on it, but they can't, you know, modify the post itself. On a wiki, anyone can come in and modify anything.
So, for instance, Wikipedia is the best known of that. And it's amazing. I'm sure people have noticed this in their search engine results, how often the Wikipedia article, you know, if you do a search for something, how often the Wikipedia article comes up in the top five results. And I'll give a little tip out for people. And again, please don't abuse this. Use this to deliver value. In a Wikipedia article, you are allowed not only to add content, you're allowed to add links. And those usually appear at the bottom of the article for additional information or for resources. And, you know, again, respect this and because, you know, Wikipedia people are pretty vigilant and they have a sort of vigilante aspect to them at times, which is a good thing, I think. If you have a link or a web page that is really relevant to a particular article that hits a particular keyword, it's absolutely legitimate to put your link in that article and point it back to you. I get a lot of traffic that way myself. Not trying to, you know, generate traffic, but, you know, I wanted to make sure certain articles were filled out with all the proper information. And sometimes I just pop in links so that people could get more information about a particular subject. And I'm very impressed at the amount of traffic it generates.
Well, beyond that, here's a tip for anybody. If you find doing a search for whatever term you'd love for your website to rank for, you find a site where you can post content of your own to that website, you should be doing it. Wikipedia is one example, but for instance, a good blog comment that's relevant to the topic and actually makes sense will get you a ton of traffic based upon the idea that other people are searching for that subject as well.
Gotcha. So a lot of this begins with sort of its traditional SEO skills. And to me, 80% of SEO is keyword research, knowing what keywords you want to win for. And a big part of keyword research is simply taking those keywords that you think have promise and doing your own searches and seeing who comes up. And this has always been, since the beginning of time, kind of one of the key, and it's funny, I hardly ever hear anybody talk about this. Maybe I'm not in the right place at the right time when they're talking about it, but, you know, if your keyword is, you know, Munster cheese, for some, I guess I'm thinking of Wisconsin, you should, one of the very first things you should do as a fledgling internet business owner or as an old pro is search Munster cheese on Google and catalog, I mean, actually put in a spreadsheet every website, you know, every, I'd say the top 20 at least websites that come up. You want to know, you know, what content they have. Can you post to them? Who runs them? If they've got article submission opportunities. And then you want to check out all the AdSense ads and see everybody that has advertised for that keyword. And kind of a basic thing to do, but I'm shocked and amazed at the number of folks that are in internet marketing. And I, you know, they ask me, hey, can you give me some pointers here? And the first thing I do is search their main keywords, and I start talking to them about their competitors. Or in some cases, in one case, I found a major supplier for somebody. This fellow sold poker chips. And I found a company that makes customized playing cards, so you can put anything you want on the back of a playing card. And this guy's been in business for years. And he said, oh, I've been looking for a company like that for years. And I found it in 2 seconds on Google. So what is this all about? I guess it's a ramble, but do your homework. And Google is not just something that you search when you're looking for, you know, what pizzeria is open late at night in Duluth, Minnesota. It's something that you do market research. And the thing you're looking for is who's in your space. You know, who's a potential partner? Who's a potential place for you to plug your messages into? Who's a potential advertiser maybe on your site? I mean, the Internet, the main thing about the Internet for me is that it's an open book. There's so much that you can find out without ever, you know, leaving your living room or your den, and you should really take advantage of that and be systematic about it.
Absolutely.
You know, another site that I really like, I stumbled upon it, a friend recommended it, and I kind of got hooked on it for a few weeks. I was addicted to it, and then I sort of backed off because I realized it was the way I was using it as a consumer wasn't necessarily the best use of my time, but I use it now as a marketer, and it's called StumbleUpon.com. And I've had confirmation of this from several people, and it certainly jives with my experience that is also a major traffic generator.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
In fact, I'm stunned. It's not unusual for StumbleUpon to be, you know, 3, 4, sometimes number 2 in my traffic sources for a given topic or keyword.
I would agree totally and completely.
Well, if let's do two things. If somebody's really new to this, you've given them a very good idea, which is start with one and focus on it. How would people decide which one to focus on? You know, how do you pick?
Here's what I tell people that pay me thousands every year for coaching. This is obviously a variation on it. But number one, you have to focus on your passions. So if you're a writer, it would be something related to creating content. There are social websites based around content and writing that you would be literally stupid not to use. Mm-hmm. If you have a flair for drama and like being on camera, video is a no-brainer. So if you just are a likable person and you like talking to people, social networking sites would make sense. So it's just a matter of knowing yourself and understanding where you would easily excel. It's much smarter to start with something that you would be good at than to start with something that would pose a huge challenge for you.
Great. Great. Recently, you know, someone with, you know, pretty high prominence came out with an article where he basically dismissed the idea of passion and said, you know, don't, you know, it's nonsense, don't worry about passion, go where the money is and the money's here, and he sort of laid out, you know, the ideal, his vision of the ideal marketplace. I have to disagree with that, and I have to go, concur and agree with what you're saying about passion. Reality of business is a kind of a bit of a marathon. You know, it's not like you wake up, you do a few smart moves, and the money just pours in. You're plugging away at it day by day, which really should be good news for everybody, because it's you can sort of create this over time, this irresistible force that can't be stopped. You know, in other words, if you're in a marketplace and you're just pouring on the content day in and day out, and you're doing everything smart, you build a business that's very hard to dislodge. So it's good news that this is a business. This is a field where little daily correct actions yield a lot of fruit. And what does that have to do with passion? Well, the only way to sustain passion is if you're already interested and passionate about the topic naturally. You're going to be hanging out with your business for hopefully for a long, long time, and it's going to be rewarding you for a long, long time. And if you're starting out without passion and you're just purely opportunistic, you know, oh, this, you know, selling lampshades is, oh, that's a great business, you know, that's the business of the 21st century. I'm going to be a lampshade merchant. Well, you know, in 3 weeks or 3 months or 3 years, you're going to wake up and realize that you don't like lampshades. You don't like the people that buy lampshades. You're sick of talking about lampshades, and you're going to have a real problem on your hands. Meanwhile, the guy who just is into lampshades and thinks they're the coolest thing ever and almost would be in the lampshade business whether it paid him or not, he's racking up the hundreds of thousands or the millions of dollars. And by the way, don't laugh at this example because our late and wonderful friend Ken Giddens helped one company go from zero to over $10 million a year in annual sales on coat hangers. Don't get involved in the gold rush, you know. Stay at home and figure out, hey, who am I? What do I like? What am I interested in? What are my natural proclivities and talents and abilities and interests? And harmonize that around your business. I always talk about the round peg in the square hole scenario. Do not go that way. You know, don't try to contort yourself to fit into somebody else's idea of what a business should be. Figure out who you are, what you like to do, what your talents are, what the things that just keep you up at night excitedly, and go there. I started, I won't even call it a hobby, it was just sort of this quirky thing I was doing online. I was saving different videos and putting them all in one easy to find place, and I originally did it for myself, and then I said, well, Jim, some of my friends literally might like this, so I emailed them and said, hey, check this out, and one thing led to another, and we now, and I, of course, being an internet marketer, I had an opt-in in case my friends wanted to get regular notices, and we went from a handful of people to, I think we're right up on 22,000 active subscribers, and you know, I was not running it as a business at all, and I thought, well, God, I should throw some AdSense up there. And lo and behold, this is like part-time to the max, but it's something I'm really passionate about. That thing, you know, it's not netting me $1 million or even $100,000, but it is netting over, netting, check in the mail, over $50,000 a year now. From some quirky thing that I never imagined in a million years would ever make me penny one. So that I just, you know, just want to throw that out to people. This passion thing is not trivial. In fact, it may be the key to the whole business. So great. So for a beginner, I think you've given them a very good sense. Get a list of what the social media sites are, to check them out. See the one that you most resonate with, and start fooling around. Start becoming a player in that one area that you're most comfortable with. But how about for the pros? Because we've got some pretty sharp people on this call, and they may already be doing a lot of social media marketing. Is there anything we can talk about that might, you know, whet their appetite for trying a new strategy or a new technique?
Absolutely. My favorite is something that I actually recently discovered on YouTube. So I think I'm going to reveal that secret. And I think that's a definitely a good place for an expert to go. So I recently discovered that you can basically force any of your videos to pop up after any other video.
Mm-hmm.
The way that you do that is first you find a video that's related to yours that's already very popular, already gained a lot of traction in the marketplace. And what you do is you take a look at the title, the description, and, of course, the tags. Tags are a way to identify your video based upon the content that's in it. Google cannot read a video, and neither can people. So tags allow you to identify your video for what it truly is. So what you do, if you find a video that you want your new video to pop up after, you use the same main keywords in the title and description. That means that you don't copy and paste. You just use similar terms. Then you take their tags and you copy and paste them. You can add more. That's not a negative thing in any way, shape, or form. But you have to make sure that the tags are set up to be in the same order. When you do this, give it 48 hours, go back and check to make sure that your video pops up. And I don't care if this video has 10 million views. Yours should be the first one to pop up afterwards.
That is phenomenal. And if you're a YouTube user, like I am, for marketing, you will immediately understand the significance of what Ross just shared with you. I did not know that. In fact, I've been wondering, how the heck do I get how do I get my video to pop up as a recommended? It's essentially, it's a recommended video to watch. You know, let's say somebody watches a video about cats, and you sell cat food, for example. I mean, what could be better? Let's say 1 million people are watching that video. I mean, that's awesome. What could be better than have your video about cat food, you know, making the right cat food choice, pop up after the most popular cat video on YouTube? I mean, well, the answer, nothing could be better. That's pretty darn good. And I've been wondering how that works, and Ross just gave us the answer. And if you didn't catch it, you have a reason to go back and listen to this interview again, because that's a good one. And I'm talking from the viewpoint of somebody that has generated over 100,000 video views on YouTube in 3 days from a standing start on one video. So I kind of know YouTube a little bit, and that's a great one, Ross. I'm taking that one to the bank today. In fact, as soon as we get off the call, I'm going to be on my computer changing tags on stuff. By the way, I just want to share this real quick, too. This is not as easy a method as Ross just laid out, but it goes back to the power of mailing lists and the power of autoresponders. One reason that I'm able to get certain videos pop up so fast on YouTube is that I time it. YouTube issues awards, basically, for the most popular, the most discussed, the most favorited video of the last 24 hours. So I make sure that when I put a video up, I also then mail the relevant list and let them know that video is up, and I drive them straight to the YouTube page. And that's how I have, you know, very often gotten, you know, on the first page of most viewed video, within a category, most viewed video of the day, most favorite video of the day, you know, right above the fold. It's you've got a list, it's easy to do, but I love your method. Your method's even better, and it's way easier. Hey, listen, we're unfortunately running out of time. Ross, I want to thank you for introducing us to this really big field. There's a lot to it. There's a systematic way to go about it. I can tell one of your kids is really interested in the topic, too.
Yeah, Daddy's youngest just crawled into his lap. He's been screaming for me for an hour, so I couldn't fight him off anymore.
Hey, well, you know, that right there is the reason we do all this stuff, you know, so that we can live the way we want to live. And if you have kids, what could be better than being with them instead of being, you know, on the road or some other place? So we're just going to wrap this up now. I want to let everybody know that if you want to hear more from Ross, come to System Seminar 2008. We're in Chicago, May 30th, 31st, and June 1st. Ross is one of 25 very distinguished faculty members. He's going to be covering social media, which is very, you know, obviously a very important topic. We've given you some pointers that you can use right now, hopefully profitably. Plus, also gave you a great resource list, which I, for a fact, know is being sold for a couple of $1,000 in another place. And you can just go, and it's his own list. He didn't, you know, pinch it from anybody. It's his own. You can go there and grab it and have that value right now. Again, it's thesystemseminar.com to register. We'd love to see you there. If you can't come, no sweat, but do take advantage of these free teleseminars. These are not, as you can tell, we're doing our level best to give you real content, real understanding that you can immediately apply. We're totally happy for you to take this information and make a fortune with it. In fact, we had one guy at the last seminar that came up to me and shook my hand and said, I really have to thank you. And I didn't know him. I didn't know his name. I didn't know who the heck he was. He said, I've been getting your free stuff for years. I made enough money as a moonlighter to more than double my salary, and I had a pretty good salary as an attorney. I then quit my job and focused on my business, and we're into the six figures, and we're probably going to hit seven figures. And I thought that I should come to one of your seminars at least, and thank you. And he was doing all that based on the free guidance that we gave, and which I love. You know, there's 10 billion people that want to learn internet marketing. So my theory is if we tell as many people as we can how it really works, we will have no problem getting the customers that we want. And we do that, by the way. Excuse me. We do sell out every year. Every year it's earlier and earlier. So, and I'm finally losing my voice. So if you're interested in what we're doing, my recommendation is to take a look at the specific seminar materials now. And if you're at all interested, you know, consider registering sooner rather than later. We had over 150 cash in hand registrants by the end of 2007. Without advertising. We just sort of told everybody, hey, here's the date, here's the place, here's the order form, and boom, over 150 people were already signed up. We don't have infinite space in the room, obviously. So, again, if you're interested, now's the time to really start looking seriously at it. If it's not possible for you, again, it's okay. Take advantage of these free calls. And we're going to let Ross take advantage of the fact that he's home with his kids. And Ross, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to seeing you at System 2008 in Chicago. And again, for people, it's thesystemseminar.com.
I can't wait to be there, Ken. Thanks for having me on the call and having me at the system.
Okay. I'll talk to you soon.
Have a good one, everyone.